Vandaag is het 600 dagen sinds de terreuraanslagen van 7 oktober. Israël is sinds toen in oorlog en vrede lijkt ver te zoeken. Hoe kan Israël in vrede voortbestaan in de nabije toekomst? En is vrede in Israël de sleutel voor vrede in het hele Midden-Oosten? Juan Caldes werkt voor de European Jewish Association en is expert op het gebied van de geopolitieke situatie in het Midden-Oosten. En met hem bespreken we welke plannen voor vrede wel en welke niet werken. Juan, welcome in our studio. It's a pleasure to have you here. So we're going to talk about peace in the Middle East. It's a big topic. But first, I want to zoom in on the news. What is actually going on in the past few days? This Wednesday, this week, marks 600 days since October 7th, 2023. And still until now, there are 59 hostages in Gaza. And Israel thinks only 24 of them are still alive. How have these 600 days been for you?
Well, first of all, good afternoon, and thank you for having me here today. The past 600 days have been an absolute nightmare, not just for me as a European Jew, but for the European Jewish community as a whole. Obviously, October 7th changed our lives, well, from many ways. First, from something that we thought that it was something from the past, which was the feeling of having to walk normally in the streets in certain European capitals. In my case, living in Brussels, I can say that Brussels, as of right now, along with Amsterdam, London, and Berlin, and Paris, I would say that that's the epicenter of, from the Western point of view, in which we see the resurgence of anti-Semitism coming stronger, obviously through the lens of anti-Zionism, but also more on a day-to-day basis, we've had to see how Jewish schools and synagogues, we need extra protection just to go to prayer, just to bring your kids to school.
And you personally, you also experience anti-Semitism on the streets?
In my case, no, I haven't, because I don't wear with my kippah on. Also, I make that a lot easier in that sense. With my Magen David, until a year ago, until 6 months ago, the first year, I didn't wear my Magen David was completely inside of my shirt because I didn't want to show.
It's like the Star of David.
Yes, correct. I didn't want to show it just to be safe. And that's also what all security and authorities would tell you, which again, I think it's very worrying because it's normalizing something that shouldn't be normalized, because we've seen statements also coming from the police in Berlin saying that for people that are Jewish or LGBTQ, that they should avoid certain neighborhoods because they cannot assure their security. I mean, since when did we normalize that in our own streets, in our own continent?
You don't feel safe.
You don't feel safe as a citizen, independently of your ethnicity, religion, sexuality. The fact that you don't feel safe on the streets is something very concerning. So unfortunately, we've seen this and directly affecting the Jewish community.
Exactly.
And many people have to take much more security precautions for that.
Yeah, and this is on a personal level. Your work is for the European Jewish Association. How has the war in Israel and Gaza affected your work?
Well, it has made our life much more difficult working with, in my case, in the field of advocacy, working with parliamentarians from all over the EU, all the way from Spain to Poland. It has made our life much more difficult because we feel that we have to work twice as hard to get to our objective and our goals from a work perspective, because in their view, independently of the politician that might be in charge, obviously we see much more skepticism and hostility from the left and the far left. But on the right, we've seen some backlash as well, because everything that happens in the region, everything that is being happening since this wage was war, by the way, unilaterally by a terrorist organization, which is Hamas, on Israel on October 7th, has had a big repercussion, because no matter what happens in Israel, all the bad things that may come out, especially on the media, that the media will distribute later in a very biased way, unfortunately, and not neutral and impartial, affects us as Jews because they hold us accountable for the decisions that are being made by the Israeli government.
Exactly.
And one can, I always say this, it's very important to emphasize this, one can criticize the Israeli government as much as they want. I'm a Spanish citizen, I criticize my prime minister all day long. That's the beauty for democracy, and that's the beauty of free speech that
it's
we can
allowed,
dissent,
yeah,
of course.
Can do it, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you should hold me accountable, especially because I'm not Israeli, I'm a European Jew, for the decisions that are being made in this war and in this conflict.
Well, your work that you do for the European Jewish Association also concerns working inside the European Union, also talking about relations with Israel. Now, recently, the Dutch foreign minister, he took an initiative to and took it also to the EU to start an investigation into the association agreement with Israel. So, what do you think of this step? We have discussed it in our interviews here before.
Yes.
Europe is a bit reluctant to continue this association agreement with Israel because what is going on in Gaza.
Yes.
So what is your viewpoint on
First of all, I have to say, it did caught us by surprise that it was Netherlands, out of all countries, that was leading it with the Dutch minister. Because if it would have come from Spain, unfortunately, I have to say this as a Spanish citizen, it would have come from this socialist slash communist government that we have in Spain, I would have expected it, or from Ireland. Those are the countries that we know.
But not
Spain,
from Holland.
But not from Holland, especially since the new government took power in the last 6 months. This is something that we didn't expect to happen at all. Obviously, we know that in this coalition, there are many dissenting voices, but we didn't expect it coming from the Netherlands. So, and the fact that now there's 17 countries that got to the States out of the 27 that were supporting it, that pushed all the way to Callas, the highest representative in the European Union for Foreign Affairs, to saying that we will have to review the accord. Truthfully, I don't think it's going to go through, because in the end, when it goes to the Council, you need 27 countries that unanimous vote. And if there's, for example, Hungary is one of those countries that will right
not
away would vote
like,
no,
this.
Of course
no.
not. And there's many other traditional allies that already said that they wouldn't vote for it, such as Germany, Italy, many Eastern European countries, because we see the power that Eastern Europe is having in this sense and how they're starting to support much more Israel than Western Europe, which are the traditional allies. So from a realistic and tachlis point of view, from a concrete point of view, we don't think it's going to go through. But nonetheless, it's something that...
What kind of signal does it give that more and more European countries are actually acting against Israel?
Yes, which is something very concerning because, again, I always say this and I cannot emphasize this enough. One can be concerned from a humanitarian point of view about the humanitarian situation that is involving the Gaza Strip. I'm a man. I'm a human being. Before I'm Jewish, I'm a human being. Of course, when I see the images of what's coming out of Gaza, I'm not happy about it. Who will be happy about it? Who will be happy about celebrating war? No one. But what cannot be forgotten, most importantly, is why we're there, why we're in this situation. And it's not because Israel started to one day just walk up and said, you know what, today we're going to bomb and destroy and erase Gaza. That's not going to happen. Why would we? No, of course not. It's in the history of Israel. Every single time that there's an attack against Israel, there's retaliation because Israel, like any other country in the world, has the right to defend itself.
Exactly.
Just like this country, this great country, the Netherlands, if, God forbid. But if now Belgium or France or Spain, another country, decided to unilaterally attack Netherlands, the way that those terrorist attacks were carried out on October 7th, the Netherlands would
have no choice to retaliate.
As it should be. And I don't think that from the international community there will be too much criticism as the way that they're carrying out those actions. But when it comes to Israel, there seems to be, again, one way to treat it, which is very different than how other countries are treated, which is that double standard that I was mentioning.
The criticism is especially focused on the humanitarian aid that was blocked from Gaza for a few months. Now, on Tuesday, Israel started delivering aid to Gaza through the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. It's a new foundation.
Yes.
And the Jerusalem Post is reporting that the Gazan Ministry of Interior claims that the aid delivery is an Israeli intelligence operations.
Yes.
And they so the Hamas tells to the Gazans not to take the aid delivered. What do you think of this?
Well, it's what we've been seeing for a year and a half already, and I will say it once again in this program. The problem with humanitarian aid is that unfortunately the moment that it crosses the Eretz crossing from Israel, the moment that it crosses into the Gaza Strip, unfortunately, Hamas, even though it has been weakened significantly since October 7th, with the military capabilities decreased to 80%, they still have a significant power, and we see it. Even though all the political leaders have been killed, they still have a lot of power. So they still control what comes into the region and what comes into the Gaza Strip in this case. So the problem that we encounter ourselves is, okay, we let in all the Gaza, all the aid to come in. Food trucks, etc. Obviously, for the civilians that have nothing to do with this conflict, because out of that 2.5 million, not everyone should be held accountable. Of course, there's plenty of innocent civilians in this conflict. We shouldn't never equate and generalize in those terms. But at the end of the day, we've seen plenty of footage of Hamas, plenty of them, taking the food from the innocent civilians.
Yeah.
That's where it should be going. And what it it concerns me and upsets me the most is that, once again, the international community should be putting the blame directly on Hamas for this, not for Israel. Israel had to block that humanitarian aid for a certain amount of time. That's another topic that we could get into once the war resumed in March. Yeah. But a very different thing is that once that humanitarian aid has been delivered to Gaza,
it should what go should to Israel the people be, who need it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what should Israel be, once again, hold accountable for something that they shouldn't? Because at the end of the day, unfortunately, Hamas still controls that. And now they're trying to find alternative ways. So all that food, medicines, everything that is very much needed for the civilians and for the innocent civilian population should be delivered through alternative mechanisms and not through Hamas looting.
Clear. Let's talk about peace. Obstacles to peace, more to say, because there are quite a few circumstances in the Middle East of which people say that there are the biggest obstacles to peace in the Middle East, and most of them concern Israel. The ongoing war that has been going on for almost 2 years now in Gaza, is that one of those big obstacles to peace, according to you?
Depends who you ask.
I ask you.
For me, the main reason is the Islamic Republic of Iran. That is the main and most existential threat to the region and to the world. Because if Iran had a very much, it had a different government, more like the one that they had 45 years ago with Reza Pahlavi, I think it would be a much different story than the one that we will be seeing. But this is a government that is very much driven by radical Islamist ideology. Not even about geopolitics influence. No, it's about ideology. And fighting against certain ideologies is extremely difficult. And in the case of Iran, we see it with all of the proxies that they've established all throughout the Middle East in this war to expand its influence. I call it the octopus. The octopus that has many branches in the Middle East.
Yeah, do you think Israel is, Iran is still behind this all this war that is going on in Gaza?
In many ways, of course, because we've seen the amount of times that they've celebrated and glorified October 7th, the amount of meetings they've had with the political bureau of Hamas. That's on one way, but also on Hezbollah. With Hezbollah, we all know the
in
power,
Lebanon,
of course, also with the Houthis in Yemen, the Iraqi militias, and many more. At the end of the day, Israel's fighting on that seven front, on that multi-dimensional war against seven fronts that are that all of them go back to the same actor, which is Iran.
Still talking about obstacles to peace, and also in the EU, it's often said that the settlements in the West Bank, they are a big obstacle to peace. Many United Nations officials have also stated that these settlements, they are the one major problem holding back a lasting peace agreement with Palestinians.
Yes.
What is your viewpoint on this?
That is a very difficult question, and it's a very contested one. First of all, when we refer to that, especially since the outcome of the 67 war, with the lines of demarcation of how it was, it's important to say that even though the international community refers to it as occupied territories, for me, they're not. They're disputed territories. I think that, believe it or not, grammatically speaking, when we speak, words are very important, so we should use them properly. This is one of those cases in which, I'm not saying that, God forbid, the situation is far from perfect, but they're not occupied per se because there was a war in 67 that was launched again by a combination of many Arab countries that they lost, and Israel acquired more territory, which happens in all of the wars, by the way. So after that, there were disputed territories that we see to this day. Then there were the Oslo Accords, and we saw how the Area A, B, C, also the name, the West Bank for some, Judea and Samaria for others. The solution must come directly from both parties that might sit eventually on the table, Israelis and Palestinians, through new ways of leadership on both sides. But this conflict, I always say it, must only come out of a solution based on those two actors. It cannot come from impositions from the international community. So the settlements...
The international community has an opinion, and they say that Israel is willingly blocking a two-state solution.
I wouldn't say that, because I think there's been, and history proves that statement completely inaccurate. Because all throughout history, since 1947, going back to the British Peel Commission, 1936, going back there, 1936, 70% of the land was going to be awarded to Arabs, leaving just the coastal areas and Galilee to the Jewish people. And then in 47, they had another opportunity with the two-state solution. That was the moment in which they should have embraced the two-state solution, just like India and Pakistan did. Because right now, we saw last month what was happening in India and Pakistan, and I cannot help but to draw the similarities between those two. Those two peoples, nationhoods and what comes out of decolonization is messy. But those two people decided to put everything afar and say, you know what? Given that we have such historic deep ties to the land. In the case of India and Pakistan, mm-hmm. they embrace the concept of a two-state solution. A one-state solution would have been proven to be horrific, mm-hmm. especially after what happened on October 7th. And not just that, 48, the war in 48, 67, 73, the two intifadas, the last escalation in 2021, the war in 2014, and now October 7th. There's been too many chances and too many opportunities to embrace peace, but it cannot come unilaterally from the same side.
Right. It has to come from two sides.
Exactly. At some states, the other side needs to acknowledge that they did something wrong, and a new leadership is needed to say, you know what, maybe the time has finally come to accept and embrace, like UAE and Bahrain did, that Israel is not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing, and I think it's the voice is getting stronger since October 7th. It's a main point of also a lot of people, that they say that the establishment of the State of Israel in Arab territory is the cause of all the problems in the Middle East. Yeah. What do you think about this criticism?
Well, I couldn't be more against it. First of all, there's 22 Arab countries in the region. 22. There's one Jewish state. Mm-hmm. One. First of all, Arab land, this concept of Arab land.
That's what they say, right?
Yeah, of course, but Palestine. Mm-hmm. That's the name that has been given for 2,000 years. But I'm sorry, from a biblical and archaeological point of view, not just biblical, archaeological as well, there's been Jewish presence on that land for 3,000 years. 3,000 years, 1,000 years before the Arabs came on board. Then, as most people will know, the Romans changed the name of what was Judea and Samaria to Philistina after the second destruction of the temple, forcing Jews to go into the diaspora, but with a forced expulsion. But there was always continuing Jewish presence on the land, not to the scale that we have it now, but there was always Jewish presence on the land. So why is it that they cannot tolerate that there's this tiny state the size of New Jersey, of the state of New Jersey in America, tiny state with 10 million people that is not Arab? Why is it? Why is it?
You tell me.
Why can they not tolerate that there must be one state that is not Arab in all of these countries, which, by the way, gives the highest quality and the highest standards of life to the Arab population, to the Arab Israeli population, that they claim to say that there's an apartheid. But we see 20% of those Arab Israeli citizens living an incredible life, much better than they would in their fellow and respective countries. So I think that just comes down to a historical inaccuracy, not just that, but to the historical anti-Semitism that we've witnessed throughout history, that now, unfortunately, has mutated through the lens of anti-Zionism.
Yeah. What do you think is the way to go through with lasting peace? Because we're talking about obstacles to peace, but what could be solutions to peace in the Middle East? Israel is already there for 77 years. It has been in war constantly.
Yes.
So what could be a possible solution?
For me, number one, I will say it very briefly, but I said it before, a new government coming out of the Islamic Republic of Iran, because Iran at the end of the day, along with Saudi Arabia, are the two biggest and most influential players in the Middle East when it comes to geopolitics, for obvious reasons. And we've seen all the proxy wars they've led with the case in Yemen and many others. So a new government in Iran, because that is the evil of all causes in the Middle East, unfortunately, because they've been promoting and glorifying terrorism and violence at all costs. Number one. Number two, from the Palestinian leadership, we need new leaders. Mahmoud Abbas, which is the so-called moderate faction compared to Hamas, has
been the president of the Palestinian Authority,
has been serving, should have been served, a two-year mandate, maybe 8 years. He's been in power for 20 years, 20 years. So if we had leaders like Mohamed Dahlan, which some people might not be aware of him because he's an exile in the UAE, but he's a natural Palestinian from Gaza. If we had leaders that were more moderate and pragmatic like him, I think it would be a much different story. I'm not saying that the Israeli government, far from it, is perfect. And a new leadership will be needed after the trauma of overcoming October 7th.
Do you think Israel would play an important role in achieving peace in the Middle East?
Well, I think so. And I think that Abraham Accords proved that right. I think that the fact that there were four countries after a political stalemate of 30 years since Jordan, which was the last country in the early 90s, that accepted the idea, the recognition of the existence of the Jewish state outside of the Palestinian problem, because let's not forget, when the Abraham Accords were signed 5 years ago, thanks to the incredible work behind the scenes of President Trump, the Palestinian issue was not solved yet. And let's not forget, at the end of the day, why Iran decided, through one of the proxies, which is Hamas, to launch this attack was because they knew how Saudi Arabia and Israel were so close to signing that peace Also treaty agreement. And the diplomatic, and let's not forget the words of Crown Prince bin Salman 2 weeks before October 7th at the UN were closer than ever to having peace with Israel. So this was one of the ways to derail that process in which they knew that if Saudi Arabia, the biggest country, most important country from a Muslim point of view, from a religious point of view, with Mecca and Medina, if they accepted the existence of the state of Israel, they knew that there would be no way back.
But still, people could say, you know, Abraham Accords, it's about doing business with each other. Yes. It's not really about peace. It's just, about money.
That's one way to look at it, of course, that geopolitics is part of that. Of course, that you see that when countries interact with one another, they try to seek mutual benefits. That entails economic transactions. Of course, we're all adults here, from cybersecurity to trade to water, whatever it may be. But at the same time, the beauty of the Abraham Accords is the cultural aspect of what came out of it. And we see the relationship now between Muslims and Jews in the UAE, the Abrahamic Center that was created for all three religions, how all the textbooks, what they used to have promoting anti-Semitism, is no longer there. Because the more that you interact with a group of people, the less you start to have and hold those stereotypes that you thought to
image
be true.
Image of enemy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that if we go that way, especially, as I mentioned, through the cultural point of view, through sports, there's many initiatives that can bring us closer to peace, not just through business, obviously.
But then October 7th happened, and then Saudi Arabia joining the Abraham Accords was postponed and is actually now not happening. Do you see it happening in the close future that more Arab countries are joining the Abraham Accords or making peace with Israel?
I think it's inevitable. I think we're heading there, but obviously now it's a bit too early to speak about it because October 7th is still very fresh. At the end of the day, it's been less than 2 years. You cannot get there now. But I think that we're heading there, and especially because there's many more countries in the region that are starting to see the direct threat that Iran possesses in the region. And there's a coalition that is being currently led by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia with other Sunni Muslim countries.
So would you say that they say, you know, we have a common enemy and that's why we join together in the
That's one of the main reasons. The Sun Tzu, the art of war, the enemy of the enemy is my friend. This is not something new. And at the end of the day, not all countries have to join from an idealistic point of view or for sharing common values, as it's the case of Israel, the EU, and the U.S. because we have a common civilization, but they have other common interests. And honestly,
security is one of them.
Security is the primary one, actually, especially for Saudi Arabia. Letting now more American intervention being on Saudi soil to control what's happening with Iran and with the Houthis down. So there's a combination of all of those factors, of course.
Well, most of the Arab countries, they stated before they joined these Abraham Accords, there must be a solution for the Palestinian problem. Do you think this is an obstacle? Because Israel is trying already for 77 years to get a solution.
I think that October 7th and one, quote unquote, good thing that the Islamic Republic of Iran achieved with the horrific attacks of 7th of October was that they managed to derail the process as much as they could. And putting on the table something that was still a problem, which was what's going to happen with the Palestinian problem and the Palestinian issue.
But it's still a problem.
Which is still a problem. And now the demands from Saudi Arabia and others have been increased significantly if they come to the table with Israel. So unfortunately, I think that moving forward, I think the Palestinian issue is not going to be able to be isolated as much as Israel and others would like it to be. And not just that, but also after almost 80 years of everything we've witnessed, I think, even though I think we're very far away from it, from a realist and pragmatic point of view, I sincerely hope, because hope is everything that we have, that there will be a day in which those two sides will be able to reconcile. But I don't think it's
going to take time.
It's going to take a long time, especially because there's a society, which is the Israeli society, that is very much still in the process of traumatized after what happened. And that's going to take a lot of years, if not decades, to recover from it.
Let's talk about the UN, because in June, the UN is holding a large conference on the case of Palestine and the future of a two-state solution. Can you tell briefly what is going to be the character of this conference?
So yeah, so this is actually something very important that you just brought up because it's going to be brought up mainly in the case of Europe by France, is a country that is leading this along with Saudi Arabia and others that are joining. But France is the vocal voice driving this project. Malta, the prime minister of Malta 2 days ago just said that they would recognize the Palestinian state and many others are starting to do it. Spain,
also
Slovenia.
European countries?
Well, in last year, Slovenia, Spain, Ireland, they already did it. But this is the thing, and this is very important. This conference is going to be held to talk about the future of the region and to recognize a Palestinian state. But I always say the same. They can say whatever they want, but at the end of the day, that conflict must be resolved between two parties. Once again, you cannot just say unilaterally, we are going to declare a Palestinian state. Okay, which borders? Mm-hmm. To begin with, the conversation, which borders? For some, it's 67. For some, from the river to the sea, mm-hmm. means from the river to the sea, meaning a one-state solution from the other side.
No Israel.
That is no Israel. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they say no, a two-state solution, so both can coexist in peace. But again, how are you going to do it? Who's going to be the Palestinian? Who's going to be the leader of the Palestinian people that is going to represent them when all of this takes place? Hamas? Mm-hmm. The Palestinian Authority? Islamic Jihad? Lion's Den? Who is it going to be? Because you need a leader. They're extremely divided amongst themselves.
What would be the consequence if more and more countries are recognizing Palestine as a country?
Well, at the end of the day, we cannot forget that most countries have accepted and recognized a Palestinian state as not as a member state of the UN, but as an observer state. So we're not that far from that situation. And I think that there's more and more countries that are going to join eventually.
Mm-hmm. What's going to be the consequence of that?
Well, the consequences of that is, I said, that this is being done in a very unilateral way. And the most pressing concern for Israel should be that the traditional allies that they've had, they're starting to, in a way, they're starting to turn their backs. They should mm-hmm. be very concerned because there are two wars that are being currently waged from a military point of view, but in a diplomatic way. There's a diplomatic front that they need to take care of as well. And in that sense, there's a lot of room for improvement, most certainly. And they have to show to the world that, at the end of the day, Israel, in spite of everything that happened on October 7th, it's still very much ready, eventually, not yet, but it will be ready to hold those peace talks as they did in Madrid and in Oslo. So once again, sure, the international community can pressure and say as much as they want, but eventually a new wave of leaders from the Israeli and the Palestinian leader must come to the table to sit down and realize that both peoples are mm-hmm. both people, they're not going anywhere, and that eventually they'll have to see how they make it work because they live in the same piece of land.
Yeah, but still the conference is taking place in June, the UN conference in New York. Do you think it's gonna isolate Israel more and more from the international community?
Well, there's a chance. There's a high mm-hmm. chance, especially as we see more and more countries, especially what happened last week here in Brussels at the European Union level, with the trade association being reviewed, as we were mentioning before. There's a high chance that that might happen. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the important votes and to the important actions, they can speak and say as much as they want. But words is one thing, which in politics, that's what happens all the time. And actions is a very different thing. Yeah. So as long as it remains something in the field of words, no issue. The moment that we see it transforming into actions, then Israel will start to see the consequences, right. Which, God forbid, that will come anytime close.
I have one last question for you, Juan. So a lot of people are watching this show. They are, most of them, I think, not politicians, not working for the EU. But what can the people here, the Christians watching this show, what can they do to support a peace in Israel?
Well, first of all, march in solidarity with Israelis, and not just with Israelis, with Jewish people like myself, because unfortunately what we see every time that we see demonstrations, and this is something that I want to focus before we wrap it up, the demonstrations that we see on the pro-Palestinian camp, most people are European. Mm-hmm. Most people are not Palestinian and Arab necessarily. They're Europeans. In this case, left and far left people, but they're Europeans. They're supporting them. Every time that there, or most of the times that we see, not in the case of the Netherlands, because I think it's a bit more of an exception, but in most countries, the Jewish community is marching on the streets alone when it comes to fighting anti-Semitism. And when our Christian friends, right now they've proven in many countries how incredible they are. Mm. And we need this Judeo-Christian alliance now more than ever.
Juan Caldes, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
En u thuis ook bedankt voor het kijken naar deze uitzending van Christen voor Israël. En u heeft de oproep gehoord. U kunt zich laten informeren over Israël. En dat kan onder andere op onze website cvi.nl/actueel. Daar plaatsen we heel regelmatig nieuwe artikelen over de situatie in Israël. En daar vindt u ook deze uitzendingen en onze podcasts terug. Nogmaals, veel dank voor het kijken en graag tot de volgende keer.